Hey guys, I just wanted to let you know that this podcast is presented by mybookie.ag and that if you use the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, that you will get a 50% deposit bonus on your first deposit. And given that you are a listener to this podcast, I would assume you're relatively knowledgeable about sports, and I would trust you to try your edge on the online sportsbook. You can lay down some money and get in on the action at one of the safest online sportsbooks in the world. It's the only one that I am currently using. You can wager on all sorts of different outcomes on mybookie.ag, soccer, football, any major league, esports. You can even create your own player props, which is useful for me because if you know anything about me, I do enjoy a good player prop. So if you deposit using the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, you get a 50% bonus when you deposit. And I will add this for listeners of the TakeCast. If you deposit using the promo code MATTEK and you send proof of it to me on Twitter, I will follow you on Twitter and you can have access to me via DMs whenever you want. That's the TakeCast bonus that I'm adding in association with the mybookie.ag deposit bonus. Now let's get back to the show. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. This week's guest is none other than Matt Friedman, who sent me a direct message asking to come on the show to discuss his recent controversial Antonio Brown piece that you can find on fantasylabs.com. The quick genesis is, of course, that Antonio Brown has lost a step, for which Matt Friedman then got absolutely lambasted on Twitter, which led him to wanting to come on this podcast. And I think that this discussion, if you guys miss the old RotoViz days, if you guys like hearing a level-headed and analytical-based conversation on how guys produce their fantasy numbers, this is the show for you. Of course, you can always support the show by leaving a like or rating or review on iTunes. It's super helpful. And if you really like the show, you can, of course, subscribe to it for $5 a month on patreon.com/takecast, where you will get bonus episodes of the show, you will get my picks against the spread, and you will also get, and this is the main selling point, you will get a podcast for each specific showdown slate on DraftKings. So Thursday Night Football, Sunday Night Football, Monday Night Football, I have a podcast where I break down, you know, all of the different options for captains, for mass multi-entering tournaments, all of these showdown takes that you need. And after a quick advertisement, we will get right into the pod. Daily Roto is a mostly proud sponsor of the TakeCast, a mostly sports podcast. TakeCast listeners can save 10% at Daily Roto with the promo code JANIS, J-A-N-I-S. If you are playing on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto will help you improve your daily fantasy results this fall and save time in the process with lineup optimizers, ownership projections, fantasy projections, premium content, and much more. They have all the good stuff that you want to help you make money at sports betting and daily fantasy. Their new lineup optimizer will let you build optimal GPP teams with stacks based on their projections faster than I can punt money off betting on Peter Uihlein. Sure, you can play the guys that I recommend each week, but shouldn't you also get advice from a proven daily fantasy winner like Drew Dinkmeyer? Yes, I do have better hair than Drew, but I also have his cell phone number, and that makes me a winner almost as much as it makes him a winner of the DraftKings Millionaire Maker. And it's not just fantasy. They have tools to bet on player props, golf matchups, and a customizable NFL game simulator for this fall. Save 10% with promo code JANIS today. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the TakeCast. I am joined by my good buddy, Matt Friedman, who at various points in our careers has been my co-contributor, my boss, my editor, many different hats, my co-host on podcasts. Matt has worn many different hats. Right now, he's wearing the hat that I have worn many times, which is that of being burnt by the heat of your own take. Matt, how you doing, man?
I'm good. I mean, you have to have a sense of humor about these things. And right now, yeah, I mean, technically, I'm wearing a Fantasy Labs hat. But, you know, metaphorically, Twitter-wise, I'm definitely wearing the I Just Got Burnt by Antonio Brown hat. Which, by the way, I should say, I saw this coming. I knew this. Congratulations. Antonio Brown went off in his sweet spot of being a home favorite. Just to show, I feel like I still have an accurate read on this. And if anything, that perversely, that game makes me feel I'm still on the right side of this take. I bet the overs on his, receiving props, his fantasy point props and stuff like that. So, I feel like I have a solid read on the situation. But it just didn't work out for, you know, hashtag 1 week. But I was still looking at all the numbers after that one game. And, I'm still right. it's
so,
still a situation.
So explain the article that you wrote on Fantasy Labs and explain the, the immediate visceral feedback that you got.
Yeah. So the article itself, and I should say, I don't think it's clickbaity, but maybe it is. It's called Antonio Brown is falling off a cliff and no one cares. And basically the premise,
I can confirm as a passive observer that is clickbait.
Yeah. So, and I should say this was the one piece, it's been a long time since I wrote what I would say is a RotoViz kind of provocative, contrarian, deep dive analysis on one player. That's vintage, classic, old school, RotoViz. And that's what this piece is. So, I think everyone at this point kind of values Antonio Brown as if he's still the best receiver in the league. And in reality, I think he's probably the 10th or 12th best. And I think in a year from now, he's probably going to be 18th or 24th. And people are still going
He's like the Russell Westbrook of wide receivers. Once that quick twitch athleticism goes, it's just going to be sad to watch him.
Yeah. And I think it's already started to go. And so people are do you even watch the tape? This is what happens when you don't watch. And it's I do watch. And I think the thing is I'm not the only person who's saying this, literally physically, he looks as if he's a little bit slower this year and he's going to be even a little bit slower next year. But if you don't even look at that, if you look just at the numbers, even after his all world week 13, Sunday Night Football home favorite performance, out of all of Roethlisberger's receivers, he's still the least efficient this year on a per target basis. This is still the least efficient he's been at any point in his career at turning targets and air yards into receptions, yards after the catch, and ultimately receiving yards, even after last night's game. So it's you can continue to say that he's the best receiver in the league. I'm going to continue to bet over when he's in good spots and under when he's in bad spots. And that's going to be profitable for me long-term.
I mean, this is his lowest receptions per game since 2013. This is his lowest yards per reception. 2016, they used him really close to the line of scrimmage a bunch, but other than that season, it is his lowest yards per reception since 2012. I don't think you would have to be a big time, ignore all data points kind of guy to assume or to assert that this age 30 season from Antonio Brown is as good as his other years. I guess what it really does is people just, they chase, it's the touchdowns. And the fact that he's scoring the touchdowns is he's good.
Yeah, exactly. It is entirely the touchdowns. And you and I know, everyone who looks at numbers know, that is the flukiest thing. And that's the thing that's last to go. But this is the canary in the coal mine. He leads the league in targets, but he's ninth in receptions and 11th in yardage. That is a huge discrepancy.
And Smith-Schuster is better than him in every efficiency metric that you could ever whatever website you choose to subscribe to, you go to their efficiency metric, Smith-Schuster will be better than Brown.
Yeah. So the thing is, he leads the league in end zone targets. And so he leads the league in touchdowns. But what happens, and this is very Jordy Nelson-esque. And by the way, Jordy Nelson just had the best game of his season yesterday. No one's being oh, Jordy Nelson's still alive, you know, but it's that battle was ultimately won. But so the thing is what happens when the touchdowns go? What happens when his per target inefficiency relative to the rest of his career, what happens when that leads ultimately to fewer targets? You're left holding the bag on a guy who is no longer the best receiver on
the
league.
Do you think they ever will, though?
That way.
Do you think they ever actually will? Because I do kind of foresee this like second version of Antonio Brown, kind of like what Fitzgerald has done, where he's just like, okay, I'm only going to play the slot. I'm only running 6 yard slant routes and I'm never breaking a tackle ever. My job is to do the Brandon Lloyd, which is to catch the ball and immediately fall down. I think Antonio Brown will be really good at that when he's like 34.
Yeah, if they're smart, that's how they'll use him. But that still won't be like Antonio Brown that we see today. You know what I mean? So like basically, yeah, if I'm saying he's falling off a cliff, what I'm saying that to try to like convey, look, you shouldn't be valuing him as the best receiver in the league. You need to be valuing him as like the 10th best. But like ultimately, like I don't think we're all that far away from it being like a thing where he's like the 18th best receiver in the league. Like we're probably a year away from that. And ultimately, like that inherent skill will translate to, I think, fantasy production that is less than what you would expect given where you have to draft him in 2019.
Do you think that he will go in the first round of 12-team leagues next year?
Yeah, because everyone's going to look at the fantasy points. They're not going to ignore the yardage. They're just going to look at the fantasy points and be like, oh, still scoring a lot of points. Great, draft him in round one.
Do you think Julio will go in round one? Or do you think, like, how many touchdowns does Jones have now? I don't even honestly know.
I think he scored touchdowns in like 3 or 4 straight games. So he didn't have a good game yesterday, but on the season, he's still having like a really solid campaign. So
yeah,
I think
now that most of my seasonal teams with Julio Jones on them are dead, I actually hope that he's just bad for the rest of the year. I hope that he has like 312 yards in like the next 4 games. That is my hope for him, because I would really like to be able to get that discount on him again next year.
Yeah, even if that happens, he would still end up having a really good season. But yeah, I think Julio will still go in the first round next year. But yeah, so anyway, I'm right now being a little burnt by this Antonio Brown thing, but it's so funny. Like I take almost like a perverse pleasure, and I think like we're similar in this way, and this might be kind of like a RotoViz type of thing. Mm-hmm. Like I take a perverse pleasure almost in like everyone jumping on Twitter being like, you're such a donkey. This was such a dumb take. Have you taken this article down?
That is like the most expensive black truffle in the world to me.
Yeah.
Like I have no shame about that at all. I love, and I had this same take earlier in the year. Like I think around like week 4 or 5, I was like, guys, Juju Smith-Schuster is the wide receiver one in Pittsburgh. And people, you know, every time Antonio Brown would score a touchdown in primetime, people would be like, oh, dude, yeah, who's the real wide receiver one? And then Smith-Schuster has 200 yards on 7 targets and no one says anything.
Yeah. Well, and so the thing that kind of kills me about this is people are like, Antonio Brown is getting double cover, triple cover. And it's like, okay, even if that is the case, he's playing with the best receiver on the field in his career. So, like, if anything, he's getting less attention from defenses than he's ever gotten. And he's still less efficient at converting targets into yards than he's ever been. So like something is off, and maybe it's like just the connection with Roethlisberger, but like, I don't think that's entirely it, because Roethlisberger, like if you look at PFF data, like on a per target basis, like he's still just as accurate as he's been last year and the year before. So like Antonio Brown, like I should acknowledge this, like, yeah, he does lead the league in like quote unquote PFF uncatchable balls. But like, what does that mean? Like part of that, I think, means
it's only uncatchable because he's so small, man. If he was bigger, if he was taller. And then Evan Silva brought up this great thing from like back in the early RotoViz days in the Roto World Dynasty League. He traded Antonio Brown away to get Demaryius Thomas. Back when that was a very legitimate trade that you could make. And I tweeted at him, Evan, you won that trade by 6 inches.
Oh, that's so good. That's so like team big receiver. That's good. I mean, so anyway, like it's I don't know. It's a situation where I actually like perversely, even though that game went so hard against me, I actually feel even stronger about the position. Because I think like 3 years ago, if Antonio Brown gets 13 targets, even those same 13 targets in the same situation as a home favorite, he has 180 yards or 200 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, like he has 47 DraftKings points coming away from 13 targets or whatever. Yeah.
So like, I feel pretty good actually about it. Like, if this is the worst case situation, like I'm on the right side of this, and that like everyone piling on one side of Twitter, like I know I'm on the right side of this, you know, like, so I'm not going to like really engage much on Twitter about this. I'm probably not even going to write a follow-up. If this were RotoViz, if this were like 5 years ago,
you would have written like seven,
there were like three follow-up articles on this. It's just like, it's not worth it. But yeah, no, I think I have that thick skin that has kind of been cultivated through like the early RotoViz days, that it's just this, like the Twitter stuff, it doesn't bother me. It makes me laugh.
What were some of your best hot takes back in like, I guess we were starting it kind of in like 2013. So yeah, that would have been like the Odell draft class, Cordarrell Patterson. I'm trying to remember like the real hot button issues back then. Vincent Brown was a good one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Vincent Brown, that was so unfair.
Like, no one has ever apologized to me, by the way. No one has ever been like, you know what, dude, you were right. But even the most staunch film grinding grinders, like you look at anyone, you know, whether it be the football guys, like if you read Waldman's stuff now, he looks at combine performance. He could tell you that he doesn't, but all of these guys do now, because they don't want to be the guys who are left holding the bag, you know, rooting for these guys who are just too slow to be good.
Yeah, man, Vincent Brown. So that was such like a classic. So Small had only 1 year of production at San Diego State. But, you know, not athletic, third rounder. I mean, that was just there. That was highly unlikely to work out ever. So that was almost like things were so slanted toward like the analytical community side.
Yeah, it was such a layup. But like, I probably got more before Odell. That was easily the number one biggest blowback thing that I got.
Yeah, Cordarrell Patterson. I was hard on Cordarrell Patterson. And also Tavon Austin. And so for me, like even within like the RotoViz community, that was a kind of like dividing moment, because those guys didn't have good market share. So everyone who was on team
market Tavon had like good enough. Like he was like 30%, wasn't he?
No, he had bad market share.
Now I gotta go look.
He had really bad market
share. I do remember the RotoViz take was that the other guy, what was his name? Shelton?
Shelton was years later. Oh my goodness,
he played Stedman Bailey. Yeah,
Stedman Bailey. Yeah.
Stedman Bailey got shot in the head and survived. Yeah.
What a badass.
Yeah. But no, he was you know what though, kind of retrospectively looking at that, Patterson and Bailey and actually Tavon, they all hit the NFL at the wrong time. They were about three. If Tavon Austin was a draft prospect this year, yeah, I actually think he would be completely defensible as a high selection. And I think whatever team took him would have a role for him ready to be good right away. Like what really differentiates Tavon Austin from Tarik Cohen or Taylor Gabriel? Like he's actually probably better than those guys. Like he's probably faster. He just has, you know, more wear. And he played on two terrible teams for his skill set. He played on the Jeff Fisher Rams and was like already a wasted byproduct. And actually, he was good for the Cowboys this year until he got hurt.
Yeah. And it's funny, like Bales, for basically Tavon Austin's entire career, has said that he's basically a running back and they're playing him at the wrong position. And I think that's probably accurate just in terms of how they use him. And Ian Harditz at Labs has said similar things about Cordarrell Patterson. And for me, like a big component of the analysis on those guys was that like they actually got significant carries in college and did well with
Patterson players. Was like a legit hybrid player. Like he got like 90 carries. Like I need to go look, but I know like when I, like at the school that I went to, when I was there with CP, they gave him like 10 carries a game.
Yeah, no, they gave him carries, and it was, I mean, like, I don't want to go in the weeds of like junior college production, but like he was super productive in junior college. And then he was productive enough in his one season at Tennessee, where he still had over like 1,000 total like scrimmage yards, was versatile as like a kick returner, a punt returner. Like those guys tend to have NFL success, like guys who get the ball in a variety of ways, score touchdown and in a variety of ways, those guys tend to have NFL success. So like, I don't regret I don't know.
Patterson has not had a bad NFL career. I think anyone who says that he's had a bad NFL career like doesn't pay enough attention. Because he is as of right now, he is the most efficient kick returner in NFL history.
In NFL history.
Yeah, yeah. He is literally the best.
Yeah, that doesn't do anything for you in fantasy, but like I would predict actually that if you ran simulations with someone like Cordarrelle Patterson, he more times than not has NFL success. Like, I could be on the wrong side of that, but like, I want big bodied guys who are athletic and can produce in a variety of ways. Those are the types of guys I want.
And people definitely forget this, but Patterson as a rookie in Minnesota, do you think people know that he scored 7 times? Like, yeah.
The second half of his rookie season was on fire. And granted, like, people could be like, a lot of that came on fluky plays where he scored like rushing touchdowns or kick return touchdowns or whatever. But like, I honestly think that if that player had been used in a different system by someone who's like more creative, like, I'm trying to think of who was the offensive coordinator.
It was Norv Turner.
You're right.
Who was a great offensive coordinator in like 1998. But I think this year with Cam and with this Panthers offense,
yes,
I think we're seeing what happens when he tries to adapt to new ideas. Yes. It just doesn't quite work.
Yeah. I would say like, if he had Cordarrelle Patterson now, like what we were seeing out of like Curtis Samuel
or DJ Moore.
Yeah. Like that is how he would be using Cordarrelle Patterson. And maybe it's like just the type of thing where like Patterson was never going to have success because like, I don't know, maybe he just didn't put in the work. Like maybe he, you know, like he just wasn't a film guy where he learned where he needed to line up, the way he needed to read defenses, whatever. There's stuff that we can't quantify, that we just don't know about these players, like work ethic or whatever it is. We're always going to miss on some guys because of something about them. And like, that's fine. Like, we don't have access to that data. We can never know.
This 2014 Vikings team was actually the most RotoViz team of all time, it's crazy that Norv was the, because they had Teddy Bridgewater who everyone at RotoViz was like, oh, he's going to be really good. They had Charles Johnson, who was famously our boy Sean's number one wide receiver in the class. They had Jerick McKinnon. They had Adam Thielen. That was his first year on the team.
Oh, God. So, side note, one of the early RotoViz podcasts that that John Moore and I did, we had a guy from like the SB Nation, like the Norsemen or whatever,
right.
And he was like, I'm telling you, Adam Thielen, like from small Minnesota State in Mankato, like he's going to be a guy who's coming out of nowhere. He's just doing stuff in training camp that none of the other wide receivers are doing. And like, I looked at his numbers. I'm like, yeah, I mean, interesting. I just, you know, I don't know. Doesn't normally happen for undrafted receivers. So I just like, I totally ignored it. Like, you know, and then years later, Thielen's just like tearing it up. But yeah, no, that was a very RotoViz team.
I'm going through my RotoViz like cadre of articles from the offseason of 2014, and there are some crazy names in here. Yeah, Toby Gerhart was like a real big RotoViz thing. Like when he signed in Jacksonville, we were all like very certain he was gonna be good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's man, the RotoViz days. Those were good old days. Those were glory days.
I mean, those really were the glory days of fantasy football for me, because now everyone's analysis is like, everyone knows defenses don't matter that much and everyone just focuses on opportunity. And like, it, like a lot, the conversation is very homogenous now. There's not a ton to argue about now, unless you just say someone is bad.
Yeah, unless you stupidly look at the numbers and then write an article about how Antonio Brown is on the way down. And it's funny because like, I've avoided stuff like this for a while for a few reasons. One, I don't know like how profitable it is, like in terms of like, I don't know how much good it actually adds to the conversation. It takes time to like deep dive into players like this. But yeah, I don't know. I just, for me, like, it was like looking at these Antonio Brown numbers, and I knew when I was like, when I was deciding to write this article, that something like this would happen, that like, this was the outcome of like, you know, I'm going to write this about like an all-time great player. And people are like, he has a chance to be the greatest wide receiver of all time. And I'm like, look, at the top of the article, I said he was the closest thing this generation might ever come to Jerry Rice.
He's
like,
he is so not even in the conversation of greatest wide receiver of all time.
I don't think he is, but he is.
Goddamn insensitive to me.
He is very good. Like, he's been one of the best wide receivers of the last half decade. Like, that much is undeniable. You know what I mean? Like, I'm saying, like, I think it's going to be slow for people to adjust their expectations on him. And, like, the lag time between the perception of him and how he realistically produces, like, that will be – that's the like the exploitative area where, like, if you could short him somehow, and I guess the way of shorting him, like, is to avoid him.
That did happen.
And then to bet against him in fantasy props, and, you know, like his other props, like his receiving props.
That happened with both of the Colts guys. It took people a couple years to realize that they were not the guys that they once were.
Like Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne.
Yeah.
That's exactly the type of situation that this is.
And I mean, you'll never find a more Marvin Harrison ass player than Antonio Brown. Like, those guys, yeah. Those guys play the exact same way. They put up like very similar statistics for a long time.
Yeah. And with Marvin Harrison, it was literally like the switch. Like, one season he was like a 1,000-yard, 10-touchdown guy, and just the next season he wasn't. You know, and
yeah, that's he went from in 2006, 1,300 yards, 12 touchdowns, 2007, 5 games, 247 yards, 1 touchdown.
Yeah, like, that's how it's going to be. And Juju is very much like the Reggie Wayne function, where, like, he's coming along, people are pretending as if he's the number two, but at some point, like, teams are really going to start treating him as if he's the guy that they need to focus on. And it's very much like the situations like where teams started putting their number one cornerback on Davante Adams when Jordy was still on the team, and people were like, oh, that's weird. Or like when teams would be putting their number one receiver on Marvin Jones instead of Golden Tate. Sorry, their number one cornerback on Marvin Jones instead of Golden Tate. You know, like, you have to look at how teams like kind of treat these guys. And at some point, like, there is going to be a shift where teams realize they should start fearing Juju much more than they should start fearing Antonio Brown.
Oh, this is actually a great point to bring this up, but teams don't double cover.
Yeah.
This is one of the biggest signals your fantasy football analyst can give you, is if they are adamant that a player is going to be double covered. Like, you can be very certain that they have not watched football, they haven't read an updated football article in like 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, there's like bracket coverage and like there's shading safeties over, but it's not as if like a defense is like hard on committing like two men to stopping another guy. Like, that just, that doesn't happen.
Well, the math just doesn't. You would either be leaving the quarterback like three guys against five blockers,
right?
Or you would be leaving five wide receivers against four defenders.
Yeah. So.
It just doesn't make sense. And that's a hat tip to my guy Matt Harmon, who did, like, I mean, he does all that crazy reception perception stuff, and it was basically like, look, I watched 3,000 wide receiver snaps, I charted all these routes, I saw double coverage like twice.
Yeah, like, I would actually love to hear what someone like Harmon has to say about Antonio Brown, like someone who, like, I think is.
Oh, you probably don't want to ask Harmon. Harmon's probably like, nah, he's still just as good.
Yeah, he probably is. I don't want to ask Harmon. I'll DM him
and I'll see. And if it's a good answer, I'll tell him we got to record like a snippet or something. But my feeling would be that Harmon is like, he's going to watch the game and be like, he caught the target he was supposed to catch. Like, that was a successful route. Cause like, that's basically what he does, is his is like a very enhanced form of success rate.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And like, I mean, yeah, I should say, like, Antonio Brown is still like capable. If I'm assuming, and this I am, that he's like the 10th best receiver in the league, he's still capable on any given week, like within his range of outcomes, of having the best performance in a week. You know what I mean? And that's what it was last night. you know, like, and the smash spot for him is as a home favorite like that. So he was just like in the perfect spot last night. So I would assume that if anyone is like watching the game, they're going to see Antonio Brown at his best. And if that is all that they are looking at within like kind of like the mental state of evaluating him next to other receivers, if they watch only that game, they're going to say he's the best receiver in the league. But like, I think if they like took samples from the previous 11 weeks, they would probably, if it's someone like Harmon, and like, I respect the work that he does. If he looked at kind of little snippets of all of the other games, I would expect that he would say Antonio Brown is not the best receiver.
I respect Harmon a ton because he's like willing to change his thoughts on guys. Like he's willing to like alter his methodology and stuff a little bit to like shift with new information, which is huge. Like the guys who've been grinding tape the same way for 10 years and they're coming up with similar results, but not changing the stuff. Like I don't respect that near as much.
Yeah. And I think for a couple of reasons. One, because it's like you always have to like self-evaluate your own methodology. But then two, like I think the game has changed a little bit within the last 10 years.
Oh, it's so tilting. These rule changes, Matt, you know, if the rules would not have changed, Team Big Wide Receiver would still be a thing. Right. These rule changes are very responsible for like Taylor Gabriel and like all these guys. Yeah. It's so much harder to defend those guys given the skill, like the rules now.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you mentioned that because it makes like it makes the data sets like very like bifurcated.
Yes.
Like it makes it harder to do long-term analysis based on numbers because you have to start thinking more about like the context in which those numbers were created, and make adjustments for it, which like that's, I don't know. It's those adjustments are very subjective. So it's just much harder to do.
Well, a ton of what we did when RotoViz first started was like legit running like PFR screens, like running screens on Pro Football Reference to be like, how many guys who are this tall had top 24 wide receiver like seasons and how many guys who were this tall. And like these guys were just literally playing a different game. Like if you watch a football game from 1988, they are running, it is just a different environment. It's not the same thing.
Yeah. Or like if you look at age adjusted metrics, like before like the 90s, like no 21-year-old was like entering the league. You know what I mean? It's like there was
guys would stay 4 years at college. Yeah. Like, straight up.
Yeah. It's just like it's a very different type of environment now. So yeah. But I mean, I think part of that is cool because it, you know, I mean, there's always like this human element to like the analytical process. Even though like I'm a RotoViz guy and you're a RotoViz guy and, you know, someone like Sean Siegel or whatever, like we could look at a player and all come to like three different conclusions about the player. And I think like that part is kind of cool because like even though we all have this kind of, I would say like contrarian perspective, like that can still lead us in different directions. There's nothing cookie cutter about the way that we look at players.
Well, I would say the thing I'm biggest about is I like never let college production go. Like if a guy is just very good in college, kind of even regardless the level, I will just think that at some point in his NFL career, he has the chance to be good. If you told me that Samaj Perine got cut by Washington and signs in Houston next year and they give him like 220 touches and he's good on those touches, I would not be surprised just because like I'm pretty certain that guys who are good in college can be good in the NFL.
No, I agree with that. And so for me, that's like a very strong, probably too strong, like Bayesian prior. I agree. Like if there's a guy who's awesome in college, like I don't know, Aldrick Robinson, like I'm always
Devontae Davis, never even made the Eagles 53-man roster.
I know. Oh, Marvin McNutt. Like I'm still so tilted about that. Like I still feel very strongly that somehow he should have been like a great receiver, even if it was like a number two receiver, like a great receiver in some capacity in the NFL. It just never happened.
Jeff Janis should have been a great NFL wide receiver. I will never understand what happened. Like no. I need Aaron Rodgers to personally address me and say, look, man, Jeff couldn't learn the offense. I didn't trust him because of X, Y, and Z. Like I need someone from that organization to be like, how do you go from winning a playoff game to playing behind Trevor Davis? Like it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, like he literally had more than 100 yards on one drive Like, people would think that is statistically impossible, yet it happened.
Look it up.
Yeah, I mean, so it's like, yeah, exactly. How does this happen? And I actually think, like, I think those would be really instructive. I don't know, like, even conversations, but, like, to be able to learn what it is with certain players where they have, like, great statistics. They have, like, everything that points to the likelihood of NFL success, but they don't have success. In those cases, what is it that goes wrong? You know, like, are we ever going to be able to quantify that? Is it just something like randomness? And like, I don't know. I have no idea what it is. I think in many cases, it's probably like scheme fit or like coaching or like whatever it is. You know, like, I think Tavon Austin, as you mentioned, like, I think he was probably just ruined, like, by like Jeff Fisher for the first like 3, 4, 5 years of his career. But like, I think a case study of what went wrong in these like surefire cases would be really interesting.
I think coaching has a big part to do with a lot of this stuff, which is really something that we're learning. And my response to that has been, I've been reading a ton of books about coaching. I read Bill Parcells' autobiography, and I read like 4 or 5 books this offseason about like how offenses developed. Like, I read about the air raid offense and the run and shoot. Because just being able to think more like a coach helps you make some of those decisions. And a big thing for these guys is just being able to trust players to execute what is in the playbook. Like, they all just so staunchly believe that. So I think a guy like Patterson or a guy like Janis or a guy like Tavon Austin, who, like, the big thing they add is not reliability or dependability or sure hands. It's something unpredictable. Like, you don't actually know what's going to happen when you give Patterson the ball. Like, it's not a sure thing he's going to gain 35 yards. He might fumble the ball. He might get tackled 10 yards behind the line of scrimmage because he makes a bad cut. And I think that's a huge reason why these guys don't get run.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. There is, like, an element to all of those guys of volatility. And I think coaches, if anything, want to try to avoid volatility because, like, while that can lead to success, like, that can also lead to, like, very evident on-field failure, and that reflects poorly on them. Like, I think if anything, like, it reflects sometimes more on them than it does on the players, or at least at some point it can. And they want to try to avoid that. They are very risk adverse. So, you know, for them, maybe, you know, they think it's not worth it, although I think it definitely would be.
I do think we are seeing a legit wave of much more risk intensive coaches, though. Like, I think coaches are making, although, man, yesterday, Sunday, week 13, that was like the worst collection of coaching decisions all happening at the same time. That I think it was like the worst weekend of watchable games all year. It was quite bad.
Well, and he had like, and I think that resulted in a whole bunch of unders hitting. Which is just like the hidden story of this season is that, like, this is the highest scoring season in NFL history, and unders are crushing, like, way more than people would expect. And it's so, you know, like, there's like an interpretive story there of, like, how do you read that data? But, like, I think that's something that is really interesting. Like, the average fan would look at this and think, like, oh, this is such a great season. But, like, under, it's been an under parade. Basically after the first month of the season. Like, I think the books have been very smart in how they've adjusted their lines in the wake of, like, seeing that this was a different type of season.
I have been betting overs on the games that are at, like, 40 points, though. Like Bills overs. I've been betting Bills and Jets overs, and I got one of them hit this week. The Jets over hit and the Bills over did not. But honestly, if you tell me Josh Allen has 135 rushing yards and 2 passing touchdowns, I'm like, oh, well, I'm cashing that ticket. That's right. So I think that's like the 58 totals, those are like good unders now. Or like even like the 55s. But like at 40, you know how easy it is to score 41 points in the NFL today?
Yeah. Yeah. Like teams are doing it in their sleep. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's that, man. You got burnt by the hot take. Was this a cathartic experience for you?
Yeah, it was good. And it's funny, like, I've been thinking, like, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, you know, if you want to be on the Takecast, you know, send me an email. And I've been thinking like, yeah, I could do the Takecast. But like, I was waiting. I was waiting for a moment when it would feel like appropriate. And, you know, getting burned by my own fire totally feels like an appropriate time to come on the show.
Yeah, same goes for anyone else listening to this. If you're in the industry, if I follow you, if I'm kind of generally aware of who you are, if you guys want to do the show, you let me know. Like, we didn't have an agenda for this show. This was Matt and I rambling about Antonio Brown and football. Really, any chance to slander Antonio Brown, who is someone that it was Antonio Brown and it was Marvin Harrison back when I started at RotoViz. Those were the two guys who everyone was like, well, you can't possibly be right because these two guys are good.
Yeah. And the thing is, actually, like, I remember there even being kind of intensity in RotoViz about Antonio Brown. And like, Antonio Brown was actually kind of like important to me in that, like, he was one of those receivers who had a lot of production as a runner in college, also productive as a return man. And so, like, I think the model of like a multi-talented player who can do lots of things, who maybe isn't all that athletically gifted. Like, Antonio Brown wasn't fast at the combine. He has good agility, definitely, and I think like you see that in his route running, but he wasn't like a fast guy at the combine. But a guy who still is able to produce in a lot of different ways, like, I think he's kind of important to me just as like a kind of like an archetype of a model of a player who enters the NFL.
Who is very valuable now, whereas I think like 10 years ago, the Antonio Brown archetype was less valuable.
Yeah, and I think like he has helped change the landscape. So like when I'm like trashing basically like Antonio Brown, like, I know it sounds weird, but like it's coming from a place of actually like deep respect. Like, Antonio Brown was a very underrated college player, underrated when he entered the NFL as a sixth round pick. You know, like, Emmanuel Sanders was drafted ahead of him in the third round. Yeah. You know, like, Hines Ward was on the depth chart there. Like, you wouldn't have expected Antonio Brown to be able to be where he is now, like, to make his way in the NFL, and he's done it. So like, I have a lot of respect actually for what he did in college, how he's gotten to where he is now, in what he's done for the last half decade. But like, it's like someone who's ridden a stock to the top and is like, you know what? Like, now is the time to sell, where everyone else wants to hold.
Get in on the Jeff Janis penny stock shares now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, so yeah, it's, you know, like, I'm feeling the heat, but I'm still actually feeling good about like the long-term prognosis of like, it's never going to get better than this for Antonio Brown. Like, this is the time to sell.
I mean, just wait for Ben to retire. Wait till he's getting passes from Josh Dobbs, then unleash those takes.
Yeah. Yeah. By then it won't matter.
Yeah. All right, everyone. That's going to do it for us here. Matt, thanks for joining.
Thanks, man.